Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.
Great to be here.
Today, we're going to examine the Afrin region in northwestern Syria. We'll be looking specifically at its history and its relationships with its neighbors, covering the period from the French Mandate around 1920 right up to 2010.
Yeah, it's quite a span of time, nearly a century. Mm. And we've got a range of sources for this: historical analyses, academic work, news archives, too.
Exactly. So it gives us, hopefully, a pretty multifaceted view of how Afrin developed over those years.
Our main goal today, really, is to understand the key factors that shaped Afrin's identity and, you know, its position in the wider region during that time.
Okay, so let's start unpacking this. Afrin, or Kurdi as it was historically known, it has this long history, really, acting as a kind of crossroads, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Its location and its importance for agriculture, particularly those famous olive groves, seem to have consistently made it, well, both valuable and strategically quite vulnerable.
And that story is just deeply tied into the broader Kurdish experience across the Middle East.
It really is. And you see that starkly when you look at how the Syria-Turkey border was drawn after World War I. That was such a critical moment.
Right, because the Treaty of Sèvres, although it was never actually ratified, it did initially suggest some potential for Kurdish autonomy in certain areas.
It did, but that was quickly superseded, wasn't it? If you look at the later agreements, like the Franco-Turkish Treaty of Ankara in 21, that redrew the lines quite differently.
And then Lausanne in 23 solidified Turkey's independence, but crucially made no mention, no provision for Kurdish self-determination.
It's a pretty clear example of how international powers often prioritize their own strategic interests over, well, local populations and their aspirations.
Indeed. So this border delimitation process, which wrapped up around 1930, it formally put Afrin inside French-mandated Syria.
Yeah, effectively cutting it off administratively from the Ottoman-era province of Kilis, which it had been linked to.
And these decisions seem largely driven by French and Turkish geopolitics, with maybe not much thought given to the existing local ties, social, economic, cultural connections.
Which undoubtedly caused immediate disruption and had long-term effects for the people there.
It's also worth remembering that Afrin town itself only really emerges in the early 1920s during the Mandate.
Right. As a market town, an administrative hub for the area, yeah. And the wider Kurda region got incorporated into the state of Aleppo.
Which was part of that French strategy of creating these semi-autonomous statelets within Syria. So new borders, new administration starting to form.
And that brings up a really interesting question. Why didn't the French create a specific autonomous region for the Kurds like they did for Alawites and Druze?
Good point. What did the sources suggest?
Well, a few possibilities. One is that the French might have felt there wasn't enough cohesive Kurdish political organization at that specific time.
Okay.
Another could be that Afrin itself wasn't seen as strategically vital compared to other areas. Mm. And of course, they were probably wary of antagonizing Turkey, given Turkey's own large Kurdish population right next door.
So this lack of specific recognition early on, it likely sowed seeds for future grievances among Kurds in Syria.
Definitely seems plausible. And then you have the whole situation with the Sanjak Val Dendreta, which later became Hatay province in Turkey. That adds another layer of complexity.
Ah, yes, Hatay. Originally part of French Syria, but France ceded it to Turkey. Why was that again?
Primarily strategic reasons, it seems. Tensions were rising in Europe in the late 1930s, and France wanted to secure Turkish neutrality or even support. So Hatay became autonomous in 38, and then Turkey annexed it outright in 39.
And the impact on Afrin?
Well, geographically, it meant Afrin suddenly found itself almost entirely surrounded by Turkish territory. On three sides, basically.
Which must have significantly increased its strategic vulnerability and its exposure to Turkish influence.
Absolutely. And for Syrian nationalists, the loss of Hatay remained a major, major point of contention for decades.
Okay, let's shift focus a bit to what life was like in Mandate-era Afrin. French rule seems focused on administration and resource development.
Yes, they did undertake some infrastructure work, roads, town planning in Afrin itself. But you always have to remember, this was tied into French colonial economic goals.
And the economy itself, it became very oriented towards agriculture, especially olives, right? And trade shifted towards Aleppo.
Exactly. That integration into the Syrian mandate system reoriented its economy away from those older Ottoman links to places like Kilis across the new border.
And demographically. Mm. The sources are clear that Afrin and Kurdog were historically predominantly Kurdish.
Overwhelmingly so. And interestingly, French policies elsewhere in Syria, particularly in the Jazeera region, actually encouraged Kurdish immigration from Turkey.
Oh, right. After the Sheikh Said revolt in 1925.
Precisely. Refugees came across and were apparently granted citizenship by the French authorities. This likely had some demographic impact in Afrin, too, although perhaps less directly than in Jazeera.
It's also interesting that the French seemed relatively tolerant of Kurdish cultural expression during the Mandate. They allowed Kurdish periodicals, for example.
That's a key point, yeah. It stands in pretty stark contrast to the policies that came later under the independent Syrian state. We'll get to that.
So, thinking about early interactions with neighbors, Afrin supplied Aleppo with agricultural goods, especially olives.
Yes, that Aleppo connection became paramount economically.
But the new border with Turkey must have disrupted traditional movement and trade with Kilis and Gaziantep.
For sure. Though it's likely some local trade, maybe some smuggling, you know, continued across the border informally, human connections don't just stop because a line is drawn on a map.
And there was that brief period, wasn't there, under the 1919 Syrian agreement, where Gaziantep and Kilis were actually under French control temporarily.
That's right, which might have facilitated some interaction initially before the border was finalized. But ultimately, Aleppo's role as the major economic center in northern Syria really cemented Afrin's ties in that direction.
Okay, so Syria gains independence in 1946. What happens to Afrin then?
It becomes a district, a mantika, within the Aleppo governorate. So administratively subordinate to Aleppo and ultimately to the central government in Damascus.
And this subordination, this centralization, it intensified later.
Yeah, particularly after the Bipayeth Party took power in 1963. Central control really tightened, and you often saw key officials in regions like Afrin being appointed from outside, not locals.
Which potentially limited local autonomy, local input.
Definitely. And this period also saw the beginning of, well, systematic discrimination and Arabization policies targeting Kurds across Syria, including in Afrin.
The goal being to promote a unified Arab nationalist identity.
That was the clear objective, yes. And it manifested in several ways.
Language and culture, for instance.
Severely restricted. Yeah. The Kurdish language couldn't be used officially, couldn't be taught in schools. There were restrictions on Kurdish names for children, for businesses. Even Kurdish songs and publications were banned.
And place names were Arabized, too.
Yes, a deliberate effort to erase Kurdish geography, in a sense.
This reminds me of the 1962 census in Jazeera, which was notorious for stripping citizenship from huge numbers of Kurds.
Around 120,000, yeah. A huge number rendered stateless. Now, our sources suggest Afrin might have been somewhat spared the most intense aspects of Arabization compared to Jazeera. It was perhaps seen as the least Arabized Kurdish area.
Why might that be?
Geography? Maybe. Different strategic priorities for Damascus? It's not entirely clear. But even if it was less intense, the overall discriminatory atmosphere, the laws, the plight of stateless Kurds elsewhere, that definitely created insecurity and grievance in Afrin, too.
And the state narrative often painted Kurds as recent arrivals from Turkey, didn't it?
Yes. Denying their long history in the region, it delegitimized their claims.
What about land and property rights? We hear about the Arab Belt Project in Jazeera.
Right, large-scale land expropriation there. That specific project didn't seem to happen in Afrin in the same way, but residents in border areas like Afrin still faced restrictions. Things like getting deeds for property or permits for building or even repairing houses could be very difficult for Kurds.
And politically, Kurdish parties.
Parties like the KDPS, founded back in 57 with members from Afrin, were never recognized. They operated underground, basically, and faced constant suppression. Activists were often persecuted, arrested.
So even with maybe some regional variation in the intensity, The overall effect of these policies across the board was likely a strengthening of Kurdish identity, a shared sense of being discriminated against.
It seems almost inevitable, doesn't it? It fostered a collective grievance.
Oh, Hannah the Chai Lady is here. Roj Bosh.
Ah, lovely.
This chai smells quite fragrant today, actually. Less smoky than sometimes, maybe a bit floral. And sweet already.
Oh, good. Sometimes it needs a bit of help, but sounds like she nailed it today. Perfect.
Definitely. Let's just take a quick moment here. Enjoy this chai.
Good idea. Short pause.
Okay. That was lovely. Just what was needed.
Hits the spot. Right. Where were we? Socioeconomics in independent Syria.
Yes. Afrin's economy. Still heavily agricultural, right? Dominated by olives.
Absolutely dominated. Those figures, like 14 million trees, are staggering. Olive cultivation, olive oil production, that was the backbone. Reports suggest maybe 75% of the population was involved in agriculture before 2011.
They grew other things too. Citrus, pomegranates.
Yes, those as well. And some local industry tied to it, olive oil presses, maybe some textiles, but primarily agricultural.
Nick, you mentioned earlier this idea of deliberate underdevelopment or neglect of Kurdish regions by Damascus.
Yeah, there's evidence pointing towards that. Hindering industrial growth, placing non-locals in key administrative posts. It suggests a pattern of keeping these regions reliant and perhaps less powerful.
But despite that, Afrin remained a significant supplier to Aleppo.
It did. That economic link persisted. Though it does seem like large-scale government infrastructure investments, specifically in Afrin, might have been limited, say, between 1970 and 2000. Syria as a whole saw state development, yes, but perhaps not evenly distributed.
Although you mentioned a pipeline plan.
Yes. The planned natural gas pipeline between Syria and Turkey routed via Kilis Afrin Aleppo. That suggests Afrin wasn't completely off the map for larger projects, especially when Syrian-Turkish relations were warmer.
But overall, this heavy reliance on agriculture, combined with a sense of state neglect, it sounds like a recipe for economic vulnerability.
And likely political discontent, too. Feeling like you're providing resources, but not getting a fair share of development or investment back.
Okay, let's turn to Afrin's relationship with Turkey itself during this period. Always complex, often tense.
Very much so. Shaped by history, security worries, and of course, the Kurdish populations on both sides of that border.
And those historical disputes lingered, like Hatay.
Absolutely. Syria never formally recognized Turkey's 1939 annexation. It was a constant background irritant. And for people in Afrin, right next door, seeing a border change in a Kurdish-populated area, that must have resonated.
Water resources, too. Another point of friction.
Yes. Turkey's control over the Euphrates and Tigris headwaters via the GAP project was a major concern for Syria downstream. There were also disagreements over the Orontes River. The Afrin River itself doesn't seem to have been a major bilateral issue, though.
And what about activity along the border itself? Smuggling?
Oh, certainly. Significant smuggling reportedly occurred all along the Syrian-Turkish border. Things like cheaper Syrian fuel, tea, tobacco going into Turkey. Afrin was likely part of that network. Plus some informal local trade, Afrin's olive oil crossing into Turkey, for instance.
Now, the PKK factor, this becomes really critical, leading up to the Adana Agreement in 98.
Hugely critical. From the late 70s or early 80s, right up until 1998, Syria, under Hafez al-Assad, actively supported the PKK.
Provided sanctuary, bases. Öcalan himself was in Damascus?
Yes, for years. It was widely seen as Syria using the PKK as leverage against Turkey, mainly over Hatay and the water issues, a way to pressure Ankara.
But PKK attacks from Syria into Turkey caused rising tensions.
Escalating tensions, exactly. It reached a crisis point in 1998 when Turkey essentially threatened military action.
And Syria backed down.
Yes. Syria expelled Öcalan and signed the Adana Agreement in October 1998.
What did that agreement entail?
Syria basically committed to ending all support for the PKK, recognizing it as a terrorist group, and preventing the PKK from using Syrian territory to launch attacks against Turkey.
And didn't it reportedly give Turkey some rights inside Syria?
That's a key part. Reports suggest it granted Turkey the right to take security measures up to 5 kilometers inside Syria if Syria failed to stop cross-border threats. A significant concession.
What was the PKK's presence like in Afrin itself before 98?
Sources don't give exhaustive detail, but given Afrin's Kurdish majority and border location, it was undoubtedly a sensitive area. One source looking back actually states the PKK had been a dominant influence in Afrin since the 1980s.
So the Adana Agreement had direct implications for Afrin's security environment. It essentially gave Turkey a conditional green light for intervention near the border.
Precisely. A major shift in the security dynamic for Afrin.
Looking at Syrian-Turkish relations more broadly, deep hostility for much of the late 20th century, then a dramatic turnaround.
A really dramatic rapprochement, yeah. From the early 2000s up to around 2010, sometimes called a golden era.
What did that involve?
Increased economic cooperation, a free trade agreement in 2004, visa-free travel, Turkish investment flowed into Syria, especially Aleppo. Even some military cooperation happened.
How would that have affected Afrin?
Well, the more relaxed border regime probably helped legitimate trade, like the olive oil business we mentioned. It also made projects like that gas pipeline seem more feasible.
But perhaps a downside for Kurdish activists.
Quite possibly. With relations improving so much, Damascus might have become even less tolerant of any Syrian-Kurdish political activity in border areas like Afrin that could possibly upset Ankara.
Right, to avoid jeopardizing the detente. Okay, lastly, what about Afrin's relations with its Syrian neighbors during this time? Aleppo obviously was key.
The Aleppo-Afrin axis was fundamental. Deep economic ties, as we've said, Afrin, as the agricultural supplier. Deep social ties, too.
And administratively linked, being in the same governorate.
Exactly. So lots of movement of people back and forth for trade, for work, services, education. Afrin's economic fortunes were very much tied to Aleppo's. It functioned as an economic hinterland.
And those established connections proved important later, didn't they, when people fled Aleppo after 2011?
Yes. Many sought refuge in Afrin, relying on those existing social and logistical networks.
What about areas immediately bordering Afrin, like Azaz to the east?
Well, Azaz in the Mount Simeon area bordered Afrin. Presumably, there were normal, everyday inter-district relations, local markets, social connections.
The ethnic mix was different in those areas, though.
Yes. Areas east of Afrin had a more mixed population, Arab-Syrians, some Arabized Kurds, Circassians, Chechens, Syrian-Turkmen communities.
But we don't have much information suggesting major conflicts between Afrin and these immediate Syrian neighbors before 2011.
Not in the sources we've reviewed for this period, no. It seems those relationships were less strategically charged compared to the Afrin-Aleppo economic link or the Afrin-Turkey security dynamic. The major conflicts involving those neighbors really erupt later, driven by the dynamics of the Syrian civil war.
So wrapping this up, looking back at Afrin from the Mandate to 2010, it really seems like a region constantly shaped by outside forces, doesn't it? By the strategic interests of bigger powers.
Absolutely. From how its borders were drawn, to how it was governed, its economy, its relationship with Damascus, its relationship with Ankara, its path was heavily influenced by external factors.
It highlights those classic complexities of borderland regions and the enduring impact state policies have on ethno-national identities.
And you see that persistent tension, don't you, between the aspirations of the largely Kurdish population there and the centralizing, often discriminatory policies of the Syrian state.
All happening under the constant shadow of Turkey, its powerful neighbor. It created a very unique, often precarious situation for Afrin.
Definite precarious.
So, as you think about this history, we've discussed the border issues that were never fully resolved, the cultural suppression, the economic dependencies, the security dynamics, especially with Turkey. How did all this set the stage for what happened in Afrin after 2010?
That's the crucial question, isn't it? Which elements of this past had the most profound impact on its later trajectory during the conflict?
Something for listeners to consider. This historical context is absolutely vital for understanding the transformations and, frankly, the tragedies that unfolded in Afrin later on. There's certainly much more to explore.